This podcast is in collaboration with Sheep Producers Australia, part of the National Sheep and Goat Traceability Task Force, to support industry with the move to mandatory electronic identification in sheep and goats. Our guest today is Paul Christopher, manager at Horsham Sale Yards.
Thank you so much for joining me. We'll start with, I think, the hardest question of all. Who are you, and tell us about where are you recording right now, and what do you do?
Yes, good morning. Paul Christopher. I am the manager of the Horsham Regional Livestock Exchange. So I've been here 19 years, and I was involved with the implementation of EID in Victoria. What was that, 6 or 7 years ago?
Yeah. And so where are you? Yeah, where are you right now?
Me physically or in the EID space?
Oh, you physically. We'll start with that and then we'll go to you in the EID space.
I'm actually talking to you from the Horsham Regional Livestock Exchange in Victoria. And yes, I'm ready for our work day to begin. We have a sale tomorrow. So we're in the middle of our spring flush. So it's been quite good.
Amazing. And so what was your role when Victoria introduced EID? So you've mentioned it, but tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, when it was said that they were looking at doing EID, I put my hand up to test sheep going through scanners, because not that I was wanting to do it, because I knew it was probably going to be more work than I wanted to do, but I realised that it was coming and I wanted to be involved to see how we could manipulate it and make it work. So I tested many different scanners with ear tags in to see the read rates, and it went back and forth for a year or two until we come up with the plan that we have now.
Yeah, and so tell us a little bit about that process. What were some of the issues you had to begin with? How did you overcome them? What changed? What didn't? Literally talk us through it all.
It was quite interesting because we were asked what our ideas were, and at one stage we were thinking about scanning sheep off the ramps as they come into the exchange, and then they'll be scanned again when they went out. And that was something that we thought would be a good idea, so then it wouldn't interrupt anything what happened in the middle. That probably, thinking back now, would have been way too expensive to have. That means you've got many more scanners. As you realise, once you have a scanner, you have to have a person to actually work that scanner. So then physical, having someone there would be too cost prohibitive. So then it was trial and error for, like I said, for many weeks, and backwards and forwards. And we had the department here, and over many weeks checking out. I think the light bulb moment for me was when we put it in a single file down one of our drafting races, that I think I ran the equivalent of 10,000 sheep through, and the scanner only missed one. And I thought, wow, so this can be done. It's just how we do it and where we do it. So, and I'm not going to say this was all my idea, because there was many that were trying it, but it was done through a collective that, yeah, the best place to do it was at the scan, at the drafts. A colleague of mine from down at Hamilton, he came up with the Hamilton draft system, which is so that you could actually draft them three ways and they would be scanned in three different ways. And that seemed to be the most effective way of doing it.
Yeah, okay. So at what point is stock scanned prior to scale now?
Yeah, so they come off our ramps and they go into holding yards there. Usually there's a drover there that collates them and puts into the software system the consignor or the vendor, and then they get drafted. So on the software, they select that vendor, and then they'll start draft, and they'll draft them three ways. Yeah, then they get allocated to selling pens. And I know there's going to be people say, well, we do five ways. But what happens then? The two top lines will go off to the selling pens, and that third way, it will go back round again and get scanned again. And truly, when you're going five ways, really the last draft is the stuff that it's not a big percentage. It's not a big percentage. So that's how we do it here.
Yeah, and would you have, just from having gone through all of that and everyone in WA sort of at the beginning end, what would be your key, in summary, like your tips and tricks for it if you were to do it again?
Honestly, our biggest Achilles heel at the moment is sheep that come in without tags.
Yeah, that was my next question. Yeah, how do you overcome that? Like, what's the time or the cost compliance? Like, what's that involve?
Very time it can be very time consuming for the agents, and I know it's a bugbear for them because we have to, you have to have 90 at least 98% compliance in the selling pen per selling lot. So then if you've only got four sheep in one selling pen, it basically all of them have to have a readable tag, otherwise they're not compliant. And of course that can take man hours for the agents. They have to, and once that they get the tags off the sale yard, so then I have to buy tags, I allocate them to the agents. The agents have to put them in, they scan them. So there is a cost, you know, and it's downtime. And I know it can be with some of our bigger sales, one of our agents is probably putting through 10, 11, 12,000. They might have to put in 50 tags, and someone has to do that. So, you know, my biggest thing with vendors is to make sure every sheep has a tag, because it's okay to say, yes, they'll rip out. And I heard this right for 5 or 6 years. What happens if they rip out? What happens? What happens? But if you haven't got one in there, if we could get rid of that, that would be a big percentage, honestly.
Yeah, and you mentioned a little bit earlier, but a common question we're getting is the non-readers as well. So how are they handled?
The same way, non-readers have to have a sale yards tag put in. So that was unfortunate. Years ago, there was a supplier that actually put some tags out there that they did have some problems with, and they're non-readers. We are, because of the seasons we've had over this way in the last 3 years, that people held on to some older stock, and some of those tags seem to be problematic. And we're working on that now to see if there's a rhyme or reason why some of them aren't scanning. But like I said, if there's, you know, if an agent's got 12,050 non-readers, it's not a big percentage, but it's very annoying. And yeah, I can see why the agents aren't happy about that.
With all of that going on, what has been the long-term impact on unloading or drafting as far as handling time?
This is probably sounds unfair from a sale yards manager because I don't do that, but I watch it, and honestly, I don't think there's a lot of time.
Okay.
It's taking them much more time to actually scan them. It's definitely much quicker in the back end.
Yeah.
So there's not all the paperwork and stuff getting done in the back offices because now with software and stuff, it's all getting done.
Yeah, I
It's
presume it would have been an adjustment though to get to that point, like.
a huge adjustment. We've come from horse and cart to you know EVs really in 5 years. Like it's yeah, and it's been a huge adjustment. And my hat goes off to the agents that they had to do this. But I think the younger agents, they took to it like duck to water. They can get onto their software on their phones and do it. Some of the older guys, and I count myself as one of them, you know, it was a little bit challenging. But there's honestly, it's not as bad as a lot of people would think. We had ended up having an 80-year-old drover here that thought he'd never be able to handle it, and he was actually receiving stock and on the tablets and doing that sort of stuff. He wasn't probably scanning, but he could, you know, use the software, which is another. I know software is another is a totally different thing to EID, but you've got to remember Victoria had to do both. We had to implement the EID, and for the EID, we had to get software. Where a lot of states in Australia now are already using software because the companies that are out there have been to see them, and they realise that digitalisation is a thing. So now that if they've got the software from one of the main companies, they've only got to push scan, and away they go.
And do you have any tips to, specifically around the software?
Look, there's one major software company that we dealt with and probably gave them, you know, we were earlier take up of their software. So we were helping with their R&D, and I find them fantastic, and they help us all the time. And that's one of the biggest things with software. You've got to have someone on the end of the line if something goes wrong.
And so I do a lot of the companies have that support person. Have you found, like, for a lot of, the growers or any of the agents, it, at the beginning ends of this, so you would say to them, don't hesitate to pick up the phone and use those companies.
Absolutely, absolutely. And since we've been doing this, they've got a line that you call, and very rarely someone doesn't answer and get back to you with and help you out and can talk you through actually. And they're really good. They dumb it down for people like me. They dumb it down. They don't make you feel like you're an idiot or anything. They, you know, they just realize you don't understand it, and they can, yeah, they make you feel quite at ease, to
Well,
tell you
I
the truth.
compare it to it's like precision ag a lot, except I would say, we're using like our yield maps and our precision ag for our tractors mostly at harvest time, and you don't use it all that often, so you're a bit rusty, but you do call a lot. But I suppose you'd be get into the habit of using it a bit more. Starting off it'd be feel a bit scary, but the more you do it, the better you'd be at it, I'm presuming.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because the software that we took, the chap that I used to ring up and ask stupid questions that I feel like I'm, pretty silly, and he was quite happy. He would say, "Look, I know IT, you know how to run a sale yard. You'd have to tell me every step. I don't mind showing you, telling you every step. And if I have to tell you 5, 10 times, that's fine." And now, it's quite good. And as you said, it's all about using it all the time. Once you get used to it, it's fine.
And so what does like the daily operating look like now? Like your flow rate, your razor, you touched on it, like your paperwork or whatever. What does that look like for you now?
Honestly, with the software, I set up the sale as a sale yards manager. I set up the sale. Once that's set up, any of the agencies can put their vendors in from their phones or their tablets out in the field so that they can actually start growing the sale right from when I set it, the sale going, which I usually do on the Thursday after our Wednesday sale. So it's there for 6 days. So they can actually put their vendors in, they can start their sale. So then once the stock arrive, their drovers come here, they can go there and do their counts and check for NVDs, all that sort of stuff. So then the sale builds over a Tuesday here in Horsham. And then most of the stuff, that's probably one thing that changed, is a lot of the stock started coming on in on the night before instead of in the morning. So our sale starts at 9:30. Usually by 8:30, nearly everything is done and the agents are in having their breakfast and maybe doing the non-readers and that sort of stuff. And then our sale starts at 9:30 as they're getting sold. It's getting registered on the tablet and then they go to the delivery pens for the buyers. That goes around after the sale. The buyers want their pro-sale summary, so I give them that from the software. All the EIDs are attached to it. They've got their NVDs. We're still NSQA accredited, so when I get audited, they come and look at the software and check everything there too. So it sort of runs quite well at the end of the sale. Then before I leave at 4:30, I do a take possession. So that means that all the ear tags that have been scanned, they come into basically into the sale yards. So they come into the sale yards holding. So if we've got 17,000, the 17,000 tags will come in on a Wednesday night. And then at 11 o'clock on Thursday, I do the sell possession. So then I push the button and all those EIDs go to whoever bought them. That's as easy as it is.
I just wanted to ask, what does an average day look like for you in your role?
Well, I'm here full time, of course. So Mondays is usually paperwork and that sort of stuff, and any other things we have to do, doing maintenance in our yards and that sort of stuff. So we do scanner checks every week. So we check the scanners. Only last week, one of the transformers decided to die, so we had to pillage one off another one, and I've ordered new ones. So we do that sort of stuff. Yeah, maintenance. Then Tuesday we do the draw. So sheep come in, and I allocate pens. Then the sheep start coming in after lunch. Agents turn up. It's looking after them. We look after any euthanasias that have to happen from any accidents on trucks. The same on a Wednesday morning. Our sale starts at 9:30. After the sale, we usually have lots of sheep to paddock because we put sheep out in paddocks here, so they go out in paddocks, and the staff start cleaning. So then the whole it's just one big cycle, and then every now and again you have to do a webinar,
Or a podcast interview.
a podcast. Sorry, podcast.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much. And have you seen anything that surprised you with this process with EIDs coming in? And what is there things that you can see now that you couldn't necessarily before?
It's quite interesting. One of the advantages for us here as a sale yard operator, you're always going to get sheep that get out. They're just when they're loading and whatever else. Well, my staff have got a hand scanner, and we've got the software on our phones. So we'll get the sheep in, we scan them, we know who owns them. So we can ring them up, we'll hold on to them a week, and they get their stock back the following week. So in the past, that was, we have no idea whose this is. There was no biosecurity at all. So now people know that if they lose their stock here when they're loading, they'll definitely get them back, which I find, to me, it's an advantage because it can be quite annoying having stock out there that you don't know whose they are. Now we can mark them as deceased as well. So if we find something that dies in the yards, we actually can scan them and mark them as deceased. So that stops that big cloud of EIDs up in the sky that have, that are going to run until they're 15 years old. So we know that they're already deceased. So that's a big plus in the EID space.
And what can producers do to maintain supply chain efficiency and save money, would you say?
Well, look, the money thing has been quite interesting as far as most producers put tags in anyway. And we had to, before this, we still had to have a registered tag. So the EIDs for mine is, I'm not sure what they are now, $1.20, something like that, maybe an EID. And a normal tag's probably 40 or 50. So it's not a huge, huge extra cost. If we lost, markets overseas, that would be a huge cost. And a lot of people want it now. There's just a lot of people want traceability. It's just happening more and more, whether we like it or not. That's the way the world's gone. They want to know that it's been ethically raised, and they can go back and find out where they've been and what's happened, or if there's a disease, where it's come from. So I don't find it as a big problem. I really don't.
And do you see those conversations happening a lot with your role around the demand for EIDs
Well, I
and
do, because we get people from overseas call in. We've had a contingent from Malaysia and all that sort of stuff, and they're quite happy. I was lucky enough during this process that we've done a tour of the UK and Holland. So yeah, it was quite interesting. That's what they want over there. That's exactly what they want to know, how things have been raised and whatever else. So it was quite interesting that they had EIDs in their sheep, but they still didn't have electronic tags in their cattle over there. They still had a physical passport for their cattle. So, and although they're on a smaller scale, a couple of the sales we went, they had 5,000 there. So, and it's all relative, because people say that we're a bigger yard, we're doing 60,000, or this smaller yard's only doing 6. But it's all per unit. It's just how many you're through agents and that sort of stuff. So. Yeah, I honestly think it can be a marketing tool later if someone has got a fantastic facility and whatever else, and if they wanted to use EIDs, that they could go back to their wedge page to have a look at their rolling paddocks and how they do stuff. That I can see it as a marketing advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would if you had to tell growers, agents, and everyone involved in the, to summarize some key takeaways, what would they be?
Don't be scared. It's going to be fine. It's not, it's really not even thought about anymore here. I still get agents growling about the tags, them having to put tags in because they don't believe it's their problem, but it's their vendor. So I keep stressing to them, you need to talk to your vendors. So my key takeaway for vendors is, please make sure they've got a tag, I've got a readable tag. Make sure that they are actually applied properly by the right equipment. We had there for a while that people just used old ear taggers that they had, and that would ruin the chips and that would cause the non-readers. So you need to use the appropriate hand tools and whatever to put them in. Look, and as far as everything else, once the scanners are in the yards, away they'll go. There's now that, like I said, now that we've been doing it for 6 or 7 years, I don't think they're going to have a new problem that we haven't had over here. So there will be an answer. There can be sometimes with readers, there can be problems with electronic noise. You're not it, it's a good idea not to have anything else plugged in around the scanners, because that can affect the read rates and that sort of stuff. But honestly, it works quite well.
Anything else you want to add?
It's just, as far as a Victorian sale yard operator, I want the rest of the country to come on, because it's quite annoying once we get sheep from New South Wales and South Australia that come here that haven't got tags, because that ruins our read rates and it gets quite confusing. So that would be an advantage to me, but that's just self, that's only me. Look, it's just where we're at. A lot of the producers are, our stuff goes into South Australia and New South Wales to be killed anyway. And I know those processors are looking for EIDs and they still upload them. So I think their processors are ready. It's just, yeah, we've got to get going onward and upward. I don't think it's going backwards now. It's not going to just go away. So it's just, let's embrace it and be involved. And hopefully we can keep in markets and we can still keep our clean green thing overseas so we can still stay in the markets.
Absolutely. No, amazing. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem, hoping that was okay.
Yeah, that was great. That
Yeah.
we got everything.
And don't forget that I was going to say we had breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, that was the key line. Thank you so much, Paul. We'll include a link to the show notes to the Sheep and Goat Traceability Task Force page on the Sheep Producers Australia website. Thank you for listening to the Behind the Collective podcast. My name's Tiff and I am your host, and the aim of these episodes is allow you to hear real stories from across the agricultural industry and hopefully inspire you to share your own.